like all, it's all a sideshow essentially with whoever's running the Fed. Like they're gonna they're forced by the math essentially. And what we've seen is that regardless of what they're like, they're gonna have to print the difference. There'll be rate cuts even in the face of inflation. They're not meant for speculation, they're meant for the end user to use them in industry, whereas the COMEX, the LME were more speculation. Like actual delivery was never a really a big part of them, which is like you had the obviously you had the sort of the paper derivative side of it really grow, whereas the Chinese are going out of their way to make it more of a delivery. They've specified them as different contracts. Like their silver contracts are actually a higher specification than COMEX, and the platinum contracts are a lower specification. So they're actually kind of create a separate contract. And in particular, oil services. I think oil services are, yeah, the biggest layup here. And I think maybe by the end of this year, if definitely by the end of next year, it'll be something that everyone wishes had backed up the truck at these levels. And we're already starting to see it go. Like anyone that's been paying attention, last night we had Rig off or acquire Valaris, or it's going to go through in Q2.
Trader Ferg, good evening to you, my friend. How are you?
Good, thanks, Andy. Thanks for having me back on. Always good to be here.
Anytime, anytime. You're one of the really good guys, the most gracious guys, and also you're really good in your thoughts and working those out, and you put your money where your mouth is. So I appreciate that. Let's start with the commodity super cycle here. I think we're in a really it might be decades, who knows? But we're in the beginning of a long commodity super cycle because of underinvestment, I think. That being said, it's like it's going to come in waves, if you would. There'll be gyrations and that sort of thing. As of right now, most things are expensive relative to where they were a couple of years ago. Again, I talk that as relativity. Where are we at in that, and where are you seeing value in the current marketplace? Not where things are going, but in the current marketplace.
I've obviously been an energy bull for quite a while, so I love that space.
Me
I
too.
think a good yeah a good way of framing this is something I got from Lewis Garve, and he just summed it up beautifully. And it was just the like I've harped on a long while how the math is a math, and whoever's like all, it's all a sideshow essentially with whoever's running the Fed. Like they're gonna they're forced by the math essentially. And what we've seen is that regardless of what they're like, they're gonna have to print the difference. There'll be rate cuts even in the face of inflation, and it seems like the market's kind of worked that out. And what you're seeing pop one by one is the commodities roughly in line with their storage. So when you see inflation coming down the pipeline, you start thinking of kind of hedging that with a store of value. And so in the almost exactly the storage costs, you're seeing gold go first, silver, platinum, all the precious metals. You're starting to see industrial metals go. I think uranium is next in line. And then you go a step up to more expensive, you go through the energy complex, and then another step up, you go through the ags, softs. They've all got far higher storage costs. And it just looks to me like as a really simple template, that's what we've seen play out. And it's kind of aligning with what I'm seeing across multiple commodity markets. You can layer the whole fact that Chinese are taking control. That's like I've written about that in quite a bit of length, but they are taking away the pricing via some really smart mechanisms. And I can't kind of overstate the importance of understanding that. Like you really need to read some of the how they're structuring their futures. They're really industrial futures. They're not meant for speculation. They're meant for the end user to use them in industry. Whereas the COMEX, the LME were more speculation. Like actual delivery was never really a big part of them, which is like you had the obviously had the sort of the paper derivative side of it really grow, whereas the Chinese are going out of their way to make it more of a delivery. They've specified them as different contracts. Like their silver contracts are actually a higher specification than COMEX, and the platinum contracts are a lower specification. So they actually kind of create a separate contract. In platinum, you can get delivered in more of an industrial form, which is something COMEX has never had. And then there's the fact there's this constant premium, so it's just sucking metal across the border, and it's a one-way valve. It can't come back across. You can't take delivery as a foreigner from Chinese contracts. So I'm happy to take this wherever you want. I can dig into that because
No, that is fascinating, actually. And do you think that's what really is going on specifically that we're seeing right now in the precious metals market, specifically with gold, silver, and I would even argue platinum, is that they're taking the physical metal, it's going to China, if you would. And then, and if that is the case, I mean, the LME in New York are screwed,
They
right?
are. No, they are. And then I think that's what you're going to see, is you're going to see wild moves. You're going to see sort of big volatility in paper trading, to try and help people get out of positions. To like you can assign a whole lot of conspiracy theories, but the more interesting thing was just even with those big smashes, the premium stayed. That premium didn't evaporate at all, and that's the most telling thing. Like it can trade wherever it wants, but as if they're maintaining that premium, the metal's going to keep moving. Yeah, so it's interesting for anyone that hasn't looked. Just bring up US exports, and in 2025, gold exports have gone through the roof. So it's all heading out. So yeah, needless to say, I think gold's got a long way to go, and any volatility is just a opportunity. I think you pretty much you view gold like the new sort of S&P passive. You just
By the dip.
dollar cost average, and you keep buying it. I see like it being essentially a new sort of neutral reserve asset for how the Chinese and the rest of the developing markets are gonna settle trade. Like everyone sort of says, oh, the US can't sort of like they'll have to take over the US system, which the Chinese don't want there, because then they'll inherit all the problems of sort of hollowing out their industrial base. So they've got no interest in that. They want it to be a neutral reserve asset. And if gold's going to take that, it needs to expand in price. And I think that's literally what we're seeing play out. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So is this, we're talking about China. Is this coming from the central bank, or is this coming from institutions, or is this coming from retail investors in China? Work that out for me, or is it all of the above?
It's mainly, yeah, the direction of central bank and all the policymakers essentially. It's they are going to use, I think it like the easiest way to kind of think about it is they're going to use it as their own new sort of petrodollar system, if you will. Like you're going to need settlement for all the commodities of now and processing they've now commoditized. If you need processed rare earths, copper, tin, manganese, aluminium, those are all going to be yuan-based contracts. And so similar to how you essentially had to have dollars to buy any oil, now you're going to have that with everything they've monopolized. And that's just going to be a reality. And yet they're not going to have to open their capital account. That's why they've got no interest in that. So it's all going to be net settled in gold to create the trust. Because obviously, between a lot of developing countries, there isn't the trust to trade between the currencies. So if you always give someone the option of net settling gold, it sort of helps create that, add that trust to the system. Yeah.
Okay. So we've seen gold and silver really run here. And you just mentioned that you think it has a lot more to go. And I would absolutely agree with you. That being said, it does seem quite frothy here. What's your opinion on that? Does that need to work itself out, or is this just a systemic problem here? And it's just buy the dip, buy the dip, buy the dip. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I think it probably goes higher over time, but the asymmetry's gone for me. I'm not interested in buying it here. I like to get stuff before it does these sort of moves. Yeah, it's I got kind of don't view gold the same way. I view gold as kind of same way I used to view kind of like holding cash. Like gold's just where I'm gonna park money. I like it because it's got a lot of optionality. I see in the future if I want to shift that gold into something that I think's got a better outlook. But gold's kind of just a just where I park money until I find a better purpose
It's
with
like a
it. With
currency.
and with yeah, I had heavy, still have heavy position in PGMs. Haven't added to it, and I don't really intend to trim it for a while. I've got if just seen no real supply response with PGMs. It's pretty easy as well. You just have to pull up Valterra, Impala, and Sibanye and go through their guidance, what they think they can lift production, and it's all pretty minimal at the moment. I see, yeah, I see there being more pressure on that space and higher prices. Granted, there'll probably be more volatility from these levels. Whenever something runs as well, more speculators get involved and you see more volatility.
Yeah. Talk to me about so gold and silver and really platinum's run. And I would argue, even argue there's not really anything cheap, but what's really, you mentioned it's just really working itself down the chain. But do you see base metals really having a floor here? Do you see them running more? And specifically copper, nickel, and so on. But yeah, what's your opinion?
So with the base metals, I was pretty much a one-trick pony. So I just went after tin. So tin's been my big position there. Kind of, I like the copper story, but it's just too, everyone's in on the copper story. Like it always bothers me when every miner tells you that's where the deficit is. That's where they're like, kind of like the Anglo-Americans. They were literally dropping every other commodity. They were throwing out their coal, they were throwing out their PGMs to all concentrate on the future metal, the transition metals, which is always comes back to copper. And so I just, my kind of investing approach is when everyone sees a sort of bull market, they're all investing, and all things being equal, the outcome won't be as great as something like I always use rhodium as the example because everyone sort of said EV is going to take over the world, so there'll be no need for catalytic converters, and so no one needs to invest in rhodium supply. And so I completely disagree with that take. And if I'm right, then I should get a far higher payoff than something everyone's kind of spotted. Of course, you can red team my argument by saying it doesn't matter if they all see it because it's so hard to bring mines on. And yeah, I understand that as well. And by default, I own Glencore, so I do have a decent amount of copper exposure anyway. So yeah, I just I
Go ahead.
guess I'm playing the game of which which commodity do I ultimately think is gonna outperform? I think they all do well.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think they all do well, and that's really kind of what we're seeing right now. They're all doing well. But in that though, it's still I'm looking for what's deep value. And I think I don't want to speak for you. I think I know what it is and I have my opinions, but what is your opinion? What's still a deep value to run, if you would, where gold and silver were, let's say even 18 months ago or 2 years ago or even a little bit longer? What's that next sector, if you would, that you see as a distortion to the bottom and shouldn't be this cheap?
I think oil is just a no-brainer here. Yeah,
Isn't
I
it?
am, and in particular, oil services. I think oil services are, yeah, the biggest layup here. And I think maybe by the end of this year, if definitely by the end of next year, it'll be something that everyone wishes had backed up the truck at these levels. And we're already starting to see it go. Like anyone that's been paying attention, well, last night we had Rig off or acquire Valaris, or it's going to go through in Q2. And so that was it's looking a lot like Liberation Day was the bottom for a lot of these, and everyone sort of expecting we're going to get some big blow up and get some sort of $40 oil chance. Like maybe we get it, maybe we get a correlation one sort of event, but I wouldn't bet on it. And yeah, to me it looks like we got the bottom back then.
Yeah, I would agree too. It was interesting. It was so negative. Oil was so negative I would say 6 months ago, 12 months ago, and that made me, I was interested and invested in it before, but that made me even more interested just because the sentiment was so bad.
Yeah, that was it. Like, no one had anything nice to say. It was like, it was almost a. I've made the joke in some of my pieces that I would have to update the charts, are saying like, this is the worst oil sediment's been since 2014, and then the only update to the chart would be 6 months later would be it's the worst it's been since 2008. They'd just keep pushing the chart back because it would keep getting worse and worse. Had
Right.
like, it was like a Goldman Sachs that was like 60% of their people they surveyed were like massive bears. And you often like it's interesting. I've shown the chart which people can run, which is just look at WTI price and then look at oil services. And they were quite kind of moved together for a while, and then in Liberation Day when they both crashed, the oil services bottomed and started cruising higher independent of oil. Oil sort of bounced around and then went lower, but the oil services kept grinding higher. And there's a something I've observed often is you don't get a nice neat narrative of when a market bottoms. Like it's always obvious in hindsight, and
Right.
often the absence of any bullish narrative is when the bottom happens, and often it can be for stuff literally as simple as the space has been so decimated, and I've run ratio charts on oil services, and it's like it's magnitudes cheaper than even the Canadian oil space or the XOP or XLE, like the broad oil producers. Like the oil services have had a really rough time, and then so incremental sort of capex into them starts to move the needle because the space has just had so many bankruptcies, has consolidated so much. They're in within oil space, the oil services, there's a decent amount of other drivers as well, like gas is a driver, even a bit of renewables like offshore wind. And I've also seen the Asian side of things, which is where I've been playing around for a while now. And a lot of the little Asian oil and gas, they did 26% the index for Asian energy services in 2025. Bet every energy index. Granted, it's not much use because it doesn't even have an index. It's that unpopular. But yeah.
That's where you want to be if it's that unpopular. It's that's interesting. So I guess what continent or what I don't know, jurisdictions do you like? Do you like American companies? Do you like Canadian companies? You just said you like Asian companies, but do you also look at Australian companies in all of this mix?
Yes, I've got a fair basket. I've got a view that I think you don't want to be. Ideally, you want to try and stay away from having too much exposure to US dollars. So I like. I've just been my most recent piece is I'm building a portfolio for my parents and my son, and that's been really focused on having a diversified basket of currencies all around the world. And I've used exchange operators to do it, and they've got an interesting history of pretty much across the board, they've massively outperformed the underlying indexes. So you get this interesting sort of double whammy that you get a really high quality business, and you get positioned in sort of a emerging market currency. That's largely why everyone's kind of written off these businesses, is because the currencies have been in the bear market, and the stocks have done nothing because no one wants to have the currency headwinds,
Right.
and also know that you'd be outperforming in US dollars and in US equities. It's just been too much. So these quality businesses have been kind of not left for dead, but just ignored really. Like an exchange operator lives on kind of flows. It's kind of like a toll road, if you will, and with no
Yeah.
traffic, even a toll road can't make money, even though it's a beautiful business model. And so yeah, with that kind of, I kind of look at my portfolio like that. If I have the choice, I will choose something nominated and ideally in like, I like being in Singapore dollars and Malaysian ringgit, and I think the yuan does well. So if I can find investments I like, it's just another bonus. I wouldn't pick it purely because of currency, but it's definitely a bonus if I can get that. And then you've also got other factors, like you get a lot better treatment on, depends where you are and your tax status, but you can get a lot better treatment going away from US companies where you get up to 30% withholding tax, whereas a lot of the emerging markets, you get zero or 10. So you actually collect a lot bigger amount of dividend. So some people, it doesn't matter if you've got the treaties, but yeah, it does matter. So
It
yeah.
does matter, and they're incentivizing you to put your money there. So, I'm all about incentives. Work down the chain a little bit more. You mentioned the softs, grains, and that sort of thing. You think, I'll just be very candid. I'm not that aware, but I've always thought agriculture was very interesting. Do you think that is a next play that's coming? Work that out for me. Why is that?
Yes, I do, and it's just hard to play. So the ETFs are crap. Like you can't. So some of the ones I looked at, they're rolling futures. Like you've got to really understand what you're doing there, and I just don't want to play that game. Really, you get into it's just too much technicality to apply with any sort of a long-term view. I'm not much of a futures trader, so even if I saw something cheap and it requires me to go in on futures, I'm not that interested. You just see too many. I hate having margins swung around on me, and as we've seen with the likes of silver, and that's I like to sleep well at night. I live in Bali, so I'm usually asleep for the US session unless my toddlers keep me up. So yeah, the way I'm playing agriculture is more. I'm actually going through a lot of the companies now for my sort of parents' portfolio because there's a lot of good yielders. And so you've got some that have like Argentinian or South American farmland. You've got some interesting ones in Brazil, really nice, really heavy yields, like up in the sort of high single digit yields. Again, you come back to what I was just saying, you can position yourself in Brazilian real. You've also got some of the FERT companies that are kind of interesting. Also got, yeah, there's one or two in Latin America and one or two in China that are, again, solid yields, good company, and the charts look really interesting to me. So yeah, that's kind of my angle on agriculture for now. Nothing really very direct.
Got it. Give me walk me through the really the rest of the year. And again, this is very tricky because who knows what's happens through the rest of the year. We could be in at another war or whatever, or an exchange could go belly up. I mean, for all we know. But really, but try to give me just your preview, really going through all of 26. What are your expectations here? And again, knowing full well that's really tricky and very dynamic.
I'll just preface that with I'm hopeless on 1 year. I know if I try and make a trade on 1 year, I'll lose money. So just know that when I'm starting. Usually it's the opposite of what I think will happen. All I'd say is I think volatility is mispriced. I think there's a lot of things that are just kind of floating along, and I don't think it would take much, kind of like a, I don't know what analogy you want to use, kind of like a lot of dry brush around and chance of fire. Could it, like it, we, I don't really buy that we're just going to get a nice rotation. There's too much leverage in the system from all this cheap money for all this period to not have really real dislocations. So yeah, I've definitely been looking at getting some long vol exposure. I'd like to raise a bit more cash, just because if you do get a correlation one event, it doesn't matter how sort of deep value positions are, you don't have a fun time. So the only way that I like to handle that is have a little bit of long volatility that hopefully gives me a bit of cash when I need it, and also have a bit of cash in case I get the long volatility kind of wrong. So, but yeah, overall, I'm really happy with the longer term outlook. Like it's the one area of the portfolio that wasn't really working was the oil services, and it's kind of it's nice to see this recent news has really lit a fire under that. Like that's going to be with Transocean and acquiring Valaris, that's turning into somewhat of a what will it be now? Just Transocean, Noble, and Seadrill. Was it Tripoli? And that's going to give real pricing power. I've already got a really positive outlook on that. sector, and just the fact that no supply can be brought on for a long time. I kind of see it minimum 5 years, and so I think there could be some really interesting day rates earned before the first drill ships kind of brought on, and then being cyclical companies they'll eventually stuff it up. But
Yeah.
yeah, I think it's gonna.
It's interesting you say that. I'm interrupting you, but it's interesting you say that. I just the oil going back to oil and oil services, and I do believe that the value is in oil services as well. I would agree with that. But just in oil, I mean, everything from sentiment, and it again, it's waking up. I think I see it waking up. I think we had a I'll call a bottom, and I might be wrong, but I think we saw our bottom. But it's just has so much stuff working for me from not only sentiment, but just again, as you alluded to, just supply and demand. They're bringing no big new discoveries that I can think of really since Canadian Sands or really, and that I wouldn't even classify that as big, but really since the North Sea, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, there's a few interesting points to that. Well, one is if it isn't the bottom, then it's still the place you want to be because when, as you're touching on, when sentiment is this bad, it means not that many people own it. So if you get absolutely nailed, it's kind of like shouting fire in a cinema when there's only five people in there. You can still
Yeah.
happily walk to the exit. There's not you're not going to get a stampede. Whereas I see some of these sectors, like when shut fire, it's already people sitting on each other's lap in an already packed cinema, and they're all standing. Like it's not going to be pretty, and especially when you add the whole passive flow where there's been no active thought to valuations or anything, and I don't even know what happens when that if that goes into reverse. But yeah, regardless, just being in some of these sectors where it's already very hated makes it invariably a lot I feel a lot better being there. And also I just feel there's been a lot of kind of quick fixes, and I feel
Yeah.
this is a scenario with obviously with shale, just like, oh, we just click our fingers and we can bring more barrels on. When I think people aren't realizing the sort of the how much high grading has gone on, how hard it will be to start bringing new barrels on. And I honestly feel the same way about uranium with a lot of the ISR. Like there's a lot of for someone that's been invested in some of the ISR projects and just been kicked in the nuts a few times by how hard it is for them to ramp. And then you've got some companies, particularly in America, just walking around sort of waving their nameplate capacity and being like, we'll hit this when we whenever
Yeah.
prices rise, and just looking at every other, like some of them are just feel sorry for any of the shareholders. Like some like a one that comes to mind is just Peninsula, and they've just been year after year like we're about to ramp, we're about to get
Yeah.
our ISR sorted, and it's just all they do is mine shareholders, and it's like, yeah, it's just rough. And ISR makes up a really big chunk of what they're projecting to come on with uranium, and some of it's never been tried before. Like even what Denson's doing with Saber ISR, that's never been tried before. So
We'll see.
yeah, we'll see. Like it's a we'll see. And there's last time around there was quite a few factors, like the what was it, the megatons to megawatts. That was it. That was like the equivalent of bringing a massive mine on,
Right.
and that really helped. We don't have that, so you've got all this ISR that is really struggling, and even the likes of Cameco is kind of doing the old magic trick. Look over here at all that we're doing with reactors, and don't look too closely at how much we're struggling with the actual mining side of the operation. And yeah, I feel there's quite an interesting parallel between uranium with that side, and the oil with the there's almost an expectation when prices rise, don't worry, fracking will kick off and fill the gap quickly, which I don't think will happen.
No, and about all that, I mean, it takes what 15 to 20 years at least to get a uranium mine going.
I
And
think
then,
conventional, yeah.
yeah, and then you just don't, click on the light, switch on a light, and you got oil. You just don't do that. I mean, if you shut down an oil field, I know. I mean, I have a background in this. You just don't do that. There's so many problems if you do shut down a field, and then you just don't go out and make a huge discovery. So, yeah, I think it's a very systemic problem. So, anyways,
I
go
just
ahead.
want to make one more point, sorry, on that. That
Yeah.
I, having watched so many interviews over the years, just on first on gold and then on uranium and then on oil, it's funny the seeing all like the gold bugs finally get their day in the sun, and I've watched people make the same, and they were right, the same arguments, and just get treated with disdain and told how that wrong they were, and they were just early. And I feel like uranium, like I've watched, I really enjoy watching Mike Akin, Elkin's interviews, and I think he's right, but he's just been early with the observations, and some of the comments of people that just obviously went in and jumped on juniors and had a horrible time, and they're like, oh, you've been saying the same thing for years now. And it's the same with shale, like, oh, this is the shale's about to roll over crowd, and it's
Yeah.
all just, I feel like it's all going to be proven right. It just took a lot longer, myself included. Like, I was kind of trying to put time frames and worked out I've got to be very suspicious of my ability to sort of know how much inventory is floating around out there, and how long anything will take to work out. Like Rick Rule says, like, don't ever mistake the imminent with the inevitable. Like, it's just, you can make a really big mistake, especially if you, as I've learned, if you use options to try and express something will happen within a time frame, generally it'll happen in that time frame plus a year.
Okay, so I got a story on options, and then I just what you said, and we'll end on that. I was short the NASDAQ using a, and this was when I was much younger, in 2000-ish, 1999. I'm going back 99. I was like, oh, this is, and I got ran over, but I had thousands of dollars in what I thought were longer term puts, longer term meaning about 6 months. And my options expired in March of 2000. And that was the top of the market. That's when they expired. So I learned my lesson. It's like what you just said, don't imminent doesn't mean inevitable. Inevitable doesn't mean imminent. And another thing, I myself am often early. I see it and I'm just often early. And so I'm trying to be self-aware in that. And then the second, just about comments or whatever sentiment, I kind of view if I'll v read the comments or view the comments on if like this interview, or I'll drop another video or whatever. And if the comments are really negative, I see that as I'm doing something right, almost, right?
I kept my comments from my first interview I ever did on YouTube, and it was on someone asked me to come on and talk about coal, and so I did talked about coal, and the first I've still got the screenshot, and the first comment on that interview when I came on was like, this is the equivalent of w watching someone loot Jewish homes during the Holocaust. Okay, thanks. So that was, that was my first pitch on coal. I think it was at the end of 2020.
Yeah. Well, on all that, I do read the comments, and to all my viewers and doers, I do appreciate the comments and all that. I absolutely do. And there is a lot of good in the comments, but it's just interesting. Just I use it as a view of sentiment almost. So, but anyways, I want to thank you. If people want to do business with you, or they want to read you, read about you, read about your work, how do they do that?
Just Substack now. I don't really go on Twitter anymore. Just Trader Ferg at Substack, and I send out a free weekly email. That's just something I've found interesting that I've read, an interesting podcast or interview, a quote, a chart, and something I'm pondering. And the rest of it's just me writing about what I'm pretty much doing with my money. That's about it.
Well, I'm a fan. I will put that in the show notes, both on YouTube, Spotify, and the Apple Podcast. Trader Ferg, I want to appreciate you. By the way, when I launched this thing, what was it, about 4 years ago? I don't know when the first time I had you on, but you were one of my first people, and I want to thank you for that. And boy, have we grown. Boy, have we grown. But I want to thank you for
It's
coming
awesome.
on.
This is well earned as well. Yeah, I love your show.
Yeah, I appreciate that. All right, have a good one. Give your best to your wife, your lovely wife, and your toddler. I remember when he was a few months old, and you complained. He was like, "Yeah, he just got a cold or something," and it's like, and you're like, "Ah, he'll be fine." It made me
He
laugh.
bounced back. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll bounce back. All right, take care, my friend.
Right. Cheers, Andy. See
Take
ya.
care. Bye.